I'm bringing you another live episode today with Dr. Nancy Lee, who is an expert on negotiation and strategy. She is a tech manager who lives in Boston, Massachusetts. She's a super side hustler. She makes a lot of money on Airbnb, and also she sells porcelain on Etsy from her family's business in China. But today, we're not talking about Etsy and Airbnb, although if you'd like to hear about Nancy's journey there, go into the Facebook group where you can see the entire recording. This piece is all of her best tips on how to succeed in U.S. corporate culture when you're coming from an international background, at being a woman in tech, and how to have the right attitude and approach to making sure that you get what you want in terms of raises and promotions, and also just in general, how those who may be a little more shy about presenting can improve their public perception and appearance and get what they want at work. So let's listen to this episode, and thanks to Nancy for coming on.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your host, Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey, everybody. I am live today with Dr. Nancy Lee. I am so excited to have her here. This is a live episode of Fire Drill that we're recording. Welcome, Dr. Lee.
Hi, Judy. How's it going? Thank you for having me.
I am doing excellent on this Monday, enjoying another week of maternity leave and freedom.
Awesome. So how long is your maternity leave?
So it's going to be 8 months total, and I'm thrilled. This is now the good part where I have freedom and it's getting easier. So I'm in a good space. I'm in a very good space.
Awesome. Lots of women are very jealous of you right now, I bet.
Oh, yeah. I know. 8 months is unbelievable. Move to Washington, guys. There's some good stuff here. So, Dr. Lee, can you start by giving everyone a quick intro of who you are personally?
Yeah. So, very quickly, I moved to the United States 10 years ago with only $800 in my pocket. And a few years later, I became one of the youngest engineering PhD. And now I manage product managers in a Fortune 20 technology company.
Awesome. And where are you living right now?
I live in Boston, Massachusetts. It's 18 Fahrenheit right now.
Oh, my. I actually grew up in the Boston area, so I'm very familiar with that chill. Now, in Seattle, it's 50 degrees this week. It's drizzly and rainy, but I'll take that extra couple digits there.
Yeah. Sounds way better. Maybe we should do the podcast in Washington next time.
We'll have to go live for sure. Yes. A live on episode on in-place recording. Okay, so let's kick it off. I want to talk a little bit about your money story. So you mentioned that you came to the U.S. with only $800 in your pocket. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what that experience must have been like. So tell us, like, where did you grow up? Like, why did you come to the U.S.?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So the $800 was linked to another bigger story regarding why I moved here. And originally, I came from China. When I went to college at that time, maybe this is new to you guys, to American, that my dad somehow already made decision at that time. He said, you don't need to think about what major to study, what school to go to. I already made a decision for you. You are going to the best fashion design school in China because women are supposed to study something good for women, and eventually you can marry a rich husband. That's exactly what he said. I'm serious. Then I was like, wow, I was too young. At the time, I was 17. And I was like, wow, this is crazy, Dad. I don't want to marry a rich man. I want to marry a sexy man. Totally. I was like, yeah, but we had 4 years fight during my 4 years in fashion design school. And because of fight of sexy men or rich men, I decided just, okay, give up everything back in China, move to the U.S. But my family, honestly, they didn't want to support me because I'm going against the will, and they didn't really have that much money to support me anyway. So I need to figure out a creative way for me to move here. At the time, I remember I seriously did only have $800 given from the schools. So what I did was I applied for grad school in the US in engineering school. So eventually I got 5 offers from all the graduate schools. There I even got offers in computer science, environmental engineering or material science, those kind of non-fashion design major. And those schools eventually gave me the full scholarship and also gave me $800 relocation fee, something like that. Then I took the $800, just moved here to start it over. And since I started school, in the PhD program, usually they give you a very little stipend. At the time, it was 10 years ago. They gave me about $1,400 per month. So I just work 60 hours directly in the lab as a PhD student and living on top of just $1,400. That's initial the money way. I'm glad I'm still alive, wasn't frozen in Boston weather.
Yeah, I can imagine that was difficult. And that's really funny about the conversation with your dad.
Yeah.
You have a passion on negotiation and influence. When did this start and what does that mean?
So how it started was actually a few years ago, I had an idea. My dream is to create 100 schools in China for mid-income, low-income families and to teach them entrepreneurship. I always enjoy helping others. But when I look back, I was like, well, who I am, how to get started? I had no money, no connection, nothing. So therefore, I decided, well, why don't I just teach on YouTube? Make people know about me. Maybe there's other people with similar mission who can join me as well. So therefore, I start my YouTube channel. Now here comes another question. What do I focus on? And I'd better to teach something I'm very good at. And I realized my strengths is public speaking, how to sell myself, and negotiation influence. So I pick one specific niche which specialized in negotiation, how to sell yourself, to help especially help people with a similar background like me, either engineers or international professionals who hasn't been exposed to lots of concept, business type of concept regarding you need to ask for higher salary, how to say it, and negotiation itself can also be used in your day-to-day life. For example, I even so crazy, this will be fun for a FIRE community. I even negotiate every week. I negotiate 20% off at Macy's, and I even negotiate a free croissant for fun. I don't mean to take advantage of small businesses. It just brush up my negotiation skills, which is very, very fun for me to use it in real life. And also negotiation itself, honestly, after I joined tech, I just realized, I've been working on something as an engineer really hard by other men who happen also to be older than me. So to be this way, we're doing the same job, but they're older, so it's getting paid higher. So I figure a way to get the 15% raise the second year within my company. And then the next time when I jump ship to a new tech company, I got 2 levels up promotion and also got 30% raise. And I was like, well, but when I talked to everybody around me, not everybody was able to get 30% raise and I started to help others. And recently, 2 of my clients got 40% raise when they jumped ship. That's my way of seeing how negotiation is related to financial independence was because as when you are trying to save more, creating side income, your main job will still be the one as the one of them I mentioned earlier, they want to double down on the career and try to make as much money as possible. So on one hand, you need to build the soft skills to, for example, public speaking skills and how to sell your value to others, how to stand up for yourself. The key skill set helps you to get promoted so you get paid more. And now the next thing is once they give you a better title, different things, or you find out other older men or women, whoever, get paid higher than you, how can you get your company to pay you more and do not burn bridges? So I realized that was my strength, and lots of people start to reach out to me to ask for advice. So therefore, I just use my YouTube channel as a source to specialize in negotiation. Now, another part I really want to share with everyone else is that people really have a misperception of negotiation. Negotiation is not just about getting money and say something. People just give you what you ask for. What I learned was that if you put negotiation in a real life scenario, it's just about how to sell yourself. For example, when you negotiate for higher salary, the decisions who you are was already made maybe like 3 months or even half year ahead of time. Because in your day-to-day interaction with your coworkers, your boss, or other stakeholders, you need to learn how to tell them the impact of who you are that you can bring into the business. And when you give presentations every time, you need to make sure nobody takes your credit. And this happens. It happened to me before when I was younger, when I didn't know how to negotiate, how to stand up for myself. People took my credit. Then when people get raise or bonus or everything, oh, that the other person got the more money than me was because someone took my credit. Like those kind of things really matters. And
let's dive into this one, because I was having a conversation with someone that should not be named, someone very close to me that was upset because she did all this work and she was in a meeting and the people that like are benefiting from the work, they never said like, oh, this was this person that did this for me. Mm-hmm. And she was like sitting there silently stewing. And my personality might be kind of like yours, it sounds like. So I would have jumped on that and been like, hey, that was me. I'm glad you guys appreciated that. Like I really enjoyed giving it to you. I always like cut in there, but not everyone is comfortable doing it naturally. Like, was that something that came naturally to you? And how do you recommend that people get credit without being, because there's the other extreme where you become like a credit chaser and it's like, oh, like watch out for that person. They're a little intense. Mm-hmm. How did you find the right balance and develop that skill?
Yeah, great. Actually, it's never come naturally to me. As you can imagine, when I moved here, 10 years ago was only $800 with broken English, totally broken English. I don't know how, I didn't know at the time how to express myself. But what pushed me to get to where I am, to stand up for myself, was because I have learned from all my mistakes through pain, seriously. Just you have seen other people getting promoted. And also, especially the pain also came from other people trying to put labels on you. For example, one of the ways people take credit or stand in your way is that, oh, Nancy, you're the youngest engineering PhD. Why don't you just crunch numbers? When I give presentations, I do that. Your English is bad. You get a PhD. You don't know business. So let me do presentations. But do you know that in most of scenarios, whoever gives the presentation was perceived as a leader? So people will never pay you what you deserve, and people pay you what they perceive who you are. So therefore, I started just push myself. Is there any way I can learn how to say things nicely, stand up for myself in a nice way? And another part what I want to tell everyone else is public speaking skills is extremely important. And now I speak in like conferences once per week, and once per month, and now became my like core strength. People know who I am, which start to people naturally give me credit just because I give more speeches and also delivered it very, very well. I had the presentation that 5 other product managers give a like presentation of their product to like 50 sales guys. After each one gave a presentation, the sales guys came up to me and shake my hand saying that you gave the best presentation. I was like, woohoo, great. I know this will be my core strength. So therefore, the way that the recommendation I can give other people is that when you start to stand up for yourself is learn the fundamental needs of other people. That's what I call this influence. Is people, sometimes they do not try to take your credit on purpose. Let's say 1% of people are evil. Maybe the other side was because you never tell them you want to give presentation. You never tell them you want to do some like a customer facing type of work. And most importantly, you never start to express, show that you have this kind of strength and value. For example, when I started it, I want to do lots of business side of work, even if I was a PhD, and I start to like do some like business related like work and start to convince my sponsor to give me the kind of job to do. And when I at the interview, when I jumped ship, they gave me 2 levels title bump. I knew how to present my work, my value in a very, very confident way. And those are the key skill set built as a foundation so that you know how to stand up for yourself, so then people won't take your credit. That's why I started to teach things on YouTube, and hopefully people like with my background can, a similar background, can start to learn and get paid more.
So what would someone do at the beginning if they are someone that when they think about the idea of giving a presentation, even hearing us talking about this right now, their palms are sweating, they feel like they're going to throw up their breakfast all over their keyboard, but they know that they should be doing it. Like, were you there and how do you get over that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So actually someone asked me yesterday, people asked me lots of those kind of career questions. And what I do is, so first of all, people need to get prepared before the opportunity comes. I would go to Toastmasters. It's like free, almost free, $30 per year, something like that, to practice once per week in a small group setting so you are ready. And the second is that you need to also take some public speaking classes. I personally have spent $20,000 in different kind of training programs, more than public speaking, how to sell, like different other stuff as well. So taking those kind of training will prepare you to make you feel confident when you present the same content, also make your skill set brushed up and better as well. Those two things. And third one is when you heard the opportunities, what you can do is that besides you do preparation, assuming you haven't done any preparation, this opportunity comes, is that find a sponsor and talk to the person ahead of time saying that this is my first time, second time giving a presentation. I believe it will be really good for me, but I need your constructive feedback so that I can do better next time. So that when you, for example, messed up in your presentation, your sponsor sitting in the audience will start, oh, what Nancy meant was this. So he will help you to make your presentation more clear, more concise, and tailor to the needs of the audience, what they want to hear. So three things will eventually help them to get to where they are regarding doing better presentations.
Let's say that someone gets embarrassed easily, and maybe they're coming from an international background and English is not their first language.
Like me.
Do you recommend, like, let's say that the first couple just don't go well. Will that hurt you professionally, or do you feel like just the fact that you did it is going to help you?
Second one. Because honestly, if it's your first or second one, who expect you to give perfect presentations, right? But people usually respect you. Whoa, he or she tried. That's one thing, right? And if you do not try once, it's never, somebody needs to do it once, right? Even if you screw up first time, you just need to set the right expectations. I really enjoy doing this. You need to show lots of passion. When I give presentation, I show lots of passion. I tell them lots of different like stories that enhance my presentation. That's something you can prepare. As long as you prepare and you try your best, because people can see that. That's something Nancy really cares about. Oh, even if she speaks broken English, we believe that this is something she can improve over the time, but she is the owner of a product. So I recommend people do it regardless. Of course, try to improve and prepare on the side, take some trainings and do the both. But I will take the second approach if I were you or them. Yeah.
Got it. So what I'm hearing, just to recap, if you are wanting a raise or promotion, the preparation starts months and months before the actual time that you ask. So you need, in your case, you knew that you were coming from a background where it was going to be harder to give presentations, but you needed to be in a visible position within the company so that when you asked for the raise, in their head, they already had perceived you to be someone that was a power player in the company. So you did training, you did Toastmasters, which I've done Toastmasters too, actually. And Toastmasters, awesome. If people want to do it, it's not that scary because everyone's learning. The people that have done it for a while are really good, but everyone else is like totally learning. So if you're not good at speaking, it's probably a really good place to start. But okay, so you Toastmasters. You made sure that when there are opportunities for you to get the credit, you kind of jumped in and made sure you got it. Now, one thing that struck me interesting, you said, I made sure to do it in a nice way. I think as women, we're all very like conscious about, are we asking in a nice way? Because we are perceived, if we do some of these things, as not being nice.
Uh-huh.
But for me, I'm kind of hesitant because I would rather be perceived as, or I'd rather be respected than liked in some ways. So some of me, I don't really care if people don't think I'm nice at work or not. But you also can get penalized for that. Because I've had bosses tell me like, oh, this person doesn't like your emails, or like they don't like you because this. Mm-hmm. But then the boss usually likes me. They don't care. This person doesn't like me. So it's very interesting. Yeah. I care. I'm like, oh my God, they hate me. But the boss doesn't care. So yeah. I don't know. Have you had that experience?
Yes, actually, my style also changed. And in my first job, I emphasize on I want to make sure people like me. I do not have too much conflict. And as I progress to be a manager, and also especially in tech industries as a product manager, you work with male developers all the time. I would rather, if I can choose, okay, put it this way. If I can choose that all my male like software developer call me, oh, she's very tough or she's very nice. I prefer people call me she's very tough because I need them to drive them to get things done. Of course, collaboration. Mm-hmm. So my style has changed, depends on my specific position. That's why when I say that you need to learn how to read other people, how to influence. So depends on what your position is. Sometimes you cannot do the power play. You need to switch, like have a different persona. So I have different personas at work doing different. It depends on what works, what doesn't. But I agree with you. You cannot please everybody in this specific topics. If as especially women in tech, if you have to choose between something more aggressive or too nice, I prefer to be more aggressive. Of course, try to find the balance is the best.
That's a good point. So emotional intelligence, your EQ, as people call it, you got to read the other person and know when is this an appropriate time to be a little more forward, and when is this appropriate time to make sure that they see you as collaborative and team player. So it's interesting. But the funny thing, some of the guys that I've had the most conflict with at work, we are best friends. Like we text each other all the time. I'm on maternity leave. I hang out with them. Like I invited them to my baby shower. It's just funny. Like I don't times where I've had like really bad conflict ended up not affecting my work in some ways. Like we're still friends. So I don't know.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Even all my other manager, my peer managers, my boss, everybody's a man. I knew I was very tough. I put a tough persona in front of them because just for the specific situation. But nobody went back to me saying, oh, Nancy's very mean, whatever. But their feedback to me is, oh, Nancy's very confident. She's very passionate. Was like, perfect. That's what I want. I try to be more tough than usual.
Yeah. So it's interesting, women in tech, this is a challenging thing. And it sounds like both of us work with mostly guys. So it's interesting. If other people have that experience, it'd be curious to hear what your experience is like. But I like what you're saying. So we talked about doing Toastmasters. When you're getting to the point where you're actually asking for the raise, mm-hmm. how did you come prepared with a binder? Like, here's the value that I added to this organization. Like, what do you come prepared to that conversation with? And do you schedule it ahead of time? Like literally, what'd you do?
Awesome. I believe I'm the expert to answer these questions. I actually made a YouTube video specifically about the timing of asking for a raise. And lots of people made the wrong perception saying that when you go into the asking for raise combined with a binder, there's lots of people ask me, do you have a written down cheat sheet, everything? I was like, okay, guys, the decision was made even before you walk into the performance review room. For example, this is behind the scenes. What does it look like in lots of tech companies? Let me review this timing for you guys. Let's say lots of companies like to do performance review in December. But do you know that how much your new raise, your bonus, all the new salaries, the decision was made maybe in November. Each company's timeline is slightly different. What I mean is when you start the conversation performance review, people saw it as the best time to have a prepared, dun, 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 you go in. No, decision that your performance reading was put in November. Between November and December, that's when the manager and HR start to do the final details conversation. So it was too late. Then people say, my students ask me, well, should I just ask, bring the binder and go in November? And dun, dun, dun. No, no, no. So for example, when I got my first 15% raise in my second year in my work was that I asked in September. Decision was made in November. I asked in September. And even before I asked, I started to bring up this issue or observation starting in the summer, talking about I am like high achiever and different things in the company. You start to influence. Again, I emphasize on influence, reading on the other side of people, what they think, and also start to sell your value to the company. I start to sell my value to my company in the summer, And I made the ask in September. And they gave me the raise and also received the second highest bonus in my company when we had a performance review in December. That's the entire process. So therefore, I had a cheat sheet for everyone else regarding the decision-making timeframe for your salary so that you can know when to start to make those inference. And to answer the other question regarding how would you prepare, how would you ask, do you bring a binder or not? Assuming you did everything I mentioned earlier, learn to inference at the right time, that's what you need to bring when you talk about different binder stuff. Let's say you ask in September. I recommend do that early. Let's say September. What you need to bring in is, did you already have customers' feedback earlier? For example, I launched lots of products. Several of my products received Mayer's best practice. So I make sure, hey, Mayer, write me a recommendation letters, right? So whenever you have great accomplishment, or even your coworkers, other teams you work with in tech company like yours, you work with multiple different companies, right? Different groups. So those people can give you recommendation, written recommendation, sincere written recommendation ahead of time. Those are very important. And when they do that, ask them to send it to your boss. They don't have to CC you, but they make sure your boss know that. So this has built out your credibility. This one thing you need to prepare. And at the same time, so giving presentations is very important. Whenever after you give a presentation, ask for feedback so that people understand, oh, she's a leader in this project. She's asking for feedback. She's trying to continue to improve herself. There's different things. And when you ask, there's different kind of skill set, different way to say things. Of course, I didn't go in with specific stack of binders, but I know what to ask, what to say depends on who is on the other side of the table. And the final advice I can give everybody else is that negotiation is a chess game. There's no such game I ask once and people just give me what I want, give me 15% right away, whatever. No, it's a 10-step chess game. You say something, they respond with something else, then you say something else. So you just need to be, put this way, be the friends with someone else on the other side of the table. For example, my salary is already closer to the higher end of my band. Then I talked to my manager, like asked for raise again. Of course, it's me, Nancy. I did have a lot of achievement for what I did for them. So I built out all the credibility until the right time. And then what we learned was that my manager feels good to give me more money, but HR has the rule. I just hit the ceiling. What can I do? Then I need to make my manager to work with me so that we can come up with a good story to tell the HR. But however, your manager in general, not believe me, 99% of manager will not tell you behind the scenes story. So how to make him to work with you to tell you what's behind the scenes was because you have use the strategy I told you earlier to build your credibility and start to learn how to negotiate and influence and sell yourself. Those soft skills lead to the final decision. The decision was made a long time ago.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So these are like complete diamonds. And Nancy, I'm so excited to share your YouTube channel with everyone listening, but also to specific people in my life that I think could use some of this type of knowledge, because what you're sharing is kind of like the behind the scenes of what actually happens in corporate and how to be successful navigating the political jungle gym that is the cubicle life that we live in. So thank you for doing this. And I also really appreciate that you're focusing on people with an international background, because I think maybe they might feel that they're already at a disadvantage when they're coming to the US and working in companies in the US when it comes to this stuff. So super helpful. Okay. So if you can put the link to your YouTube channel in the comments of this video, that would be great. And I'll make sure that it goes out in the show notes when this podcast episode goes live. Yes. So Nancy, at the end of every episode, I always ask everyone two questions. And the first question is, if people want to reach out to you or connect with you more than the YouTube channel, where can they do that?
Awesome. And they can connect me on Instagram, Dr. Nancy Lee. So Lee spells as L-I-L as lady, I as iPhone. Dr. Nancy Lee on Instagram. And my YouTube channel is the same name as well. I also have my own website is drnancylee.com. So it should be easy to find me. So on my website, I have lots of cheat sheet regarding the negotiation process and what the behind the scenes was look like and lots of things going on. And also my YouTube channel has, I start to interview people for behind the scenes stories. I don't want to tell other people, everybody know you just need to ask for more money. No. Decision-making process in each company is different. So I started to interview lots of like senior managers, headhunters, even CEO. I interview CEO who specialize in networking. So you guys can start to find more content there as well.
Oh man, this is so helpful because we talked about side hustles at the beginning, but for a lot of us, the easiest way to increase your speed at which you can hit fire is probably by doubling down on your day job. And even though you do all these side hustles, it sounds like you're a true expert in this. So I'm so lucky to have you on this podcast today. Okay, last question. What is your wildest dream?
I love this question because I want other people to help me to achieve my dream because I believe this will make great impact. So my wildest dream is that I want to build 100 schools in China to help students, high school students from middle-income, low-income families to teach them entrepreneurship. I know that there's lots of people like me who are like curious, ambitious, who want to break all the chains created by the society and their family, but they do not come from a position with lots of family money or existing network from a family, or they went to HBS. You know, people has to, like me, had to start from scratch. Even English wasn't your first language, even harder. So my goal is to help this 1% of Nancy who want to break through. So I want to build schools to bring inspiration to these people, middle-income, low-income families. So if anybody want to join me for this long-term vision, please reach out to me as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that on the podcast today and for coming on. I'm so excited for this to go live. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you. Thank you, Judy, for the opportunity.
Bye, everybody.
All right. See you guys. Bye.